WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Trade and commerce have been the lifeblood, the heartbeat of Charlotte since the very beginning. We're located at the junction of two Native American trading paths. And over the centuries, the railroad, the interstates, and the airport have enhanced our position as a facilitator of trade and commerce. The opening of a major intermodal facility at Charlotte Douglas International Airport, combined with the expansion of the Panama Canal, believe it or not, in 2014, will significantly affect trade routes around the world and present tremendous opportunities for the Charlotte region. This was news to me, so it probably is news to you, so stay with us here. To prepare the region for this global shift, CPCC is hosting the 2013 Global Competitiveness 2 Summit later this month. Next week, and we've invited three people to give us a kind of preview of the conference and a primer on the changes that are on the horizon. Jerry Orr is aviation director at Charlotte Douglas International Airport, an elusive gentleman who we can never seem to get on this program, but somehow he's here today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Mike Manis will be one of the panelists at the summit. He is Director of Community and Economic Development for the Central Ina Council of Governments. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Mike.
And Chase Saunders is an attorney with the McNair Law Firm and a member of the Planning Committee for the Regional Competitiveness Summit, which, by the way, you can find information on our website about. He wrote a paper about business history along with another panelist at the event, Michael Gallus, and CPCC President Tony Zeiss, called Create It, Make It, Move It, which we'll talk about as well this hour. Thank you for being here, too. Before we talk about competitiveness and the global summit, I would be remiss if I didn't turn over to Jerry Orr and say, what's happening at the airport? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the potential U.S. Airways-American Airlines merger very quickly. You think that's a fait accompli? It's going to happen?
It has happened, and it's no longer potential. Mm-hmm. It has happened, and we're ready to move forward.
What will that mean for Charlotte?
I think one of the big things it means for us is, for starters, instead of having one of the smaller airlines and listening to speculation about whether they're big enough to survive and be successful, we'll now be a major player with the largest airline in the world. And size does matter.
Mm-hmm. But this new company, I know the new company will be headed by the head of U.S. Airways, but it will, U.S. Airways, he will move himself to their, to the American Airlines headquarters, which is where?
In Dallas-Fort Worth.
Now, Dallas is a major hub for American Airlines. We have a tiny presence of American here in Charlotte at the moment. Will they leave a hub in Charlotte?
Oh, I think so.
Why do you think that?
Because we've been a very, very successful hub, for First Piedmont, Eastern, U.S. Airways. And our hub is based on efficiency, low cost, and being in a wonderful location.
Mm-hmm. Which is part of what we're going to talk about today, being in the wonderful location and some of the things that have happened at the airport to make it such an attractive piece of real estate and an attractive enterprise. But we're the sixth busiest airport in the world right now?
Sixth busiest airfield, which is numbers of landings and takeoffs.
Every 39 seconds a plane takes off, I'm told. Something like that.
There are a lot of them.
But if you read the paper this morning, it talks about how there's no reason, really, for Charlotte to be a hub, given the fact that most of the people who get off airplanes and get on airplanes at Charlotte Douglas are coming from and going to someplace else. They don't live here. They're not originating or terminating here. Why is that even a factor?
As you said in your opening comments, there's no reason for the city to be here.
Yeah.
But location first, we're exactly halfway between the Northeast and Florida. Mm-hmm. On the East Coast, where two-thirds of the people live, not too far east, not too far west. And then you layer on top of that we have an extremely efficient and effective airfield and airport that produces the lowest cost to the airlines of any major airport in the country.
This is you. This is your doing, the fact that we're really inexpensive for airlines to use. When did you figure out that would be a good thing to do and it would be as successful as it has been?
Well, I don't think you can prove that, but nevertheless, I grew up as a small businessman. My daddy was a small businessman. And when you're a small businessman, you got to produce a quality product. You got to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Cost and price are extremely important. Everybody wants the best, and they want it cheap.
How have you been able to do that when other airports have not or did not? By their own choosing, perhaps.
I think a big portion of that is focus, and in any organization, it's focus from the top. I help my people understand that cost is important, and we don't need to be doing things just for the fun of it, or just cause we used to do it.
What do other airports do just for the fun of it that make their costs higher, or just things that they do to make their costs higher that we do not do that make us attractive?
I think there are things in any organization that companies get in a position where they get comfortable. They're successful. They get comfortable, and there's no pressure to lower cost. I've always felt the need to lower cost. I think it's something you have to make a cultural thing in your organization. You can't just lower cost today because we didn't have a good quarter. And then next quarter we make money and go running around spending money like a bunch of drunken sailors.
You're colorful. So you're very confident that when the American Airlines merger with U.S. Airways is complete, totally complete, and they've had a chance to do the shakedown that all companies do when they merge and get rid of redundancies and things like that, that we will still be on the table as a major hub for the foreseeable future and perhaps forevermore.
And in an even better position. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here.
Okay. Now, there's something else going on. I want to talk about the summit, and I promise I will. There's something else going on at the airport that I don't understand at all, and that is this desire on the part of some people to move the control or the supervision of the airport from the city of Charlotte to an airport authority, which does not yet exist. And as I understand this, Charlotte is the only city in the Carolinas with an airport that is not supervised by an airport authority. The city of Charlotte runs the airport. And if I also understand correctly, I read an article about this in the paper, and you were quoted as saying that you're in favor of an airport authority taking it. What would be the difference?
Well, I'm a city employee currently.
Okay.
And so I don't think it's appropriate for me to.
Okay. Well, can you tell me what the difference would be between a city-controlled airport and an airport authority-controlled airport?
I don't think there'd be any difference to the citizen or the passenger. I think it would be transparent.
So where's the push for this coming from?
I think from people who think they would benefit from a different type of management.
How would they benefit?
You'd have to ask them that.
Why do they think they would benefit?
Well, I don't know what other people think.
All right. I see here we're not going to get any comments out of you about this. All right, let's talk about the global competitiveness seminar, because I did not know about what's going to be happening in the next couple of years. The Panama Canal is so far off my radar. It's in the same place with Teddy Roosevelt, who helped build the darn thing. So it surprised me that, A, something big is going to be happening down there in the next couple of years, and B, that we are in a position, a very good position, evidently, to benefit from this. We are opening, or have opened, I guess I think we're still waiting to open, this new intermodal facility at the Charlotte Douglas. What is an intermodal facility, and what does its presence mean for the airport and for the region?
Intermodal refers to the transfer of containers, ocean-going containers, from train to truck and vice versa. And what this facility does is accepts train loads of containers, which may or may not be in bond, from one of more of the four major ports in the southeast, and either distributes them locally from the Charlotte yard or loads them on other trains to go up into the Chicago area or back up into the northeast.
Now, you're talking about trains.
And
this is an airport.
This is an airport.
So this is puzzling to some people. Why is that at the airport?
Well, you can set up in your office and run an airport, or you can focus on the good of the community and the economy and what that economy needs. And I view the airport as our port. We investigated trying to get those ocean going ships up the Catawba River, and that was going to cost a lot of money.
Yes. Well, we'd build our own Panama Canal.
So the next best thing is to have that train on the dock where those containers unload right off of the boat.
Yeah.
Bring them up the railroad track instead of the interstate, which gets the trucks off of the interstate. Mm-hmm. And takes about a tenth of the energy, which generates a tenth of the bad air, incidentally, and get those containers to the rail yard here where you can combine shipments from four ports and then redistribute them on the main line of the railroad, which is the most efficient way to do that.
So not only are we a passenger hub, we are going to be a cargo hub for train travel. This is being done in partnership with Norfolk Southern. Norfolk Southern had a rail yard here, but evidently it could not expand to the degree it needed to expand to handle this new traffic that we're anticipating because of the expansion of the Panama Canal. How did you get involved in this? How did the airport decide, okay, well, if they can't expand on their property, we'll give them some of ours?
Well, we sit around and think a lot, and we have a lot of land, and we ride around and look at it, and you know, we kind of observe that we're getting ready to build a new runway. They're getting ready to build a new interstate. An airport, you have a lot of land that you can't use because of required distances between runways. Mm-hmm. And so back in 1994, we sat down with Michael Gallus and half a dozen or so leaders of the major corporations in Charlotte to develop a strategic development plan to figure out what our strengths were, what our weaknesses are, figure out how to cover up our weaknesses and build on our strengths to build the best platform that we could at the airport.
This was before the announced expansion of the Panama Canal, I take it, in 1994. So if that had never occurred, what would we have needed this big facility for?
Well, we still have ports. We still have four ports in the southeast, and those ports in the southeast have a lot more growth potential than the ports in the northeast. Very difficult for ports to expand up there. And already we were seeing goods, containers being brought in to the southeastern ports and transferred back up into the northeast.
Now, Mike Manis is with the Central Council of Governments, and I shouldn't even ask this question because there's no time to answer it in the time allotted, but I'll let you finish on the other side. How will this expansion of the Panama Canal and the existence of this intermodal facility at the airport help the region?
Well, we are located on that Piedmont Crescent, which is the train line that's been referred to, and we also have a great 17-county economic engine here that was producing the goods and the logistics activity that will fit hand in glove with that. And the foresight in 94, before there were other strategic plans in 04 and 05, and then the new plan we have now, are all building upon that.
We're going to come back and talk extensively about that and what it does mean for Charlotte and the Charlotte region in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Heath Springs Residential Care Center, providing family-oriented long-term assisted living for the elderly in historic Heath Springs, South Carolina for almost 20 years. Details at heathspringsrcc.com. And Queen's University of Charlotte presenting the Learning Society Spring Lecture with CNN's chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, February 20th. Tickets at queens.edu. From 1960 to 62, Cuban parents put more than 14,000 of their own children on planes bound for the United States. It was something called Operation Pedro Pan, Spanish for Peter Pan. It was intended to remove these children from Castro's influence and was supposed to be temporary. But many of those families have still not been reunited. We're going to learn more about this, the complicated relations between our two countries, and a possible solution tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the FDA issues new warnings on the safety of some hip replacements. What patients need to know before they move ahead with these procedures.
Join us for 2 hours of the Diane Rehm Show this morning and every weekday morning from 10 until noon, right after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impending expansion of the Panama Canal and what it means for the Charlotte region. And I didn't know anything about this, and it's pretty darned impressive what it means for the Charlotte region. Jerry Orr is Aviation Director of Charlotte Douglas International Airport, which is more than just an airport. It is an intermodal, or it will become shortly, an intermodal facility using a vast ability to transfer cargo from one train to another and ship it elsewhere in the country. And that has great implications for the region without the Panama Canal, even bigger with the Panama Canal expansion. Mike Maness is Director of Community and Economic Development at the Central Atlantic Council of Governments, and Chase Saunders is an attorney with McNair Law Firm and on the planning committee of the Regional Competitiveness Summit that Central Piedmont Community College is holding at the Harris campus next week. Information available about that on our website at WFAE.org. So why would expansion of the Panama Canal have impact on global trade, and why does it have impact on what happens here in Charlotte? It's so far away. I'm not sure who to ask that question of. Go ahead, Chase.
We're really talking about a logistics story, and logistics means flow. And if you go back to the time when you were in junior high or high school, the one equation you could remember was DRT, distance equals rate times time. Mm-hmm. And the internet age has brought us around to where you have the flat earth, everything's totally level because you can send a message to somebody else on the other side of the world practically instantaneously. Mm-hmm. So the issue then of with your stuff, how do you move your stuff to where it can be distributed or manufactured efficiently comes into play. And there are words in logistics. One of the ones that people would be most familiar with, well, here that Jerry mentioned earlier, TEUs. That's the 20-foot equivalent unit. That's the trailer that you see, the container, okay. The global container that everything is hauled in on the trucks, and it's the global container on all the ships. Up to now, when the Panama Canal was smaller, the economies of scale, the ships that you could put through there, could not deliver enough containers to make it profitable. You couldn't go around the South American tip. Mm-hmm. It wasn't economical to go the other way.
And they couldn't go through the canal because the canal wasn't big enough. It wasn't big enough for the ships.
Now the global – what happens is if you get a certain size ship going through, there's an economy of scale. They don't all have to stop in Long Beach, California, mm-hmm. break bulk, put it on a train, and ship it east. You can go directly through the canal, hit one of those four ports Jerry's talking about, and you're automatically in the stream of commerce.
And this is important because most of the population of the country lives here.
And it's relocating here. Yeah. And Florida, of course, being one of the biggest beneficiaries of the population shift in the United States.
By here, I mean the East Coast. As opposed to the center of the country.
East Coast is the beneficiary. Right. Now, what's really fascinating, and everybody's got a search engine, search words like Super Panamax or TEU. The ships that are coming through used to haul, the ones that could get through, maybe 4,000 of these tractor-trailer containers. Mm-hmm. The Super Panamax and Ultra Panamax ships that are on the books can haul anywhere from 11 to 13 in one, 22,000 truckloads on one ship. Now, you get your economies of scale, and Jerry mentioned efficiencies and costs down. And if you can deliver enough of those units to where that they can then be placed in a location like Charlotte, where they're where you either route them somewhere else or you take what's on them, do something with it. Assemble something, manufacture something, and that moves into the manufacturing story, which is big.
Which we'll talk about. So when this happens, when the Panama Canal expands to the point where it can handle these super Panamax ships. They will then come up, they won't go to the West Coast. They'll come to the East Coast and then unload their cargo at the deep water ports on the East Coast and ship them by rail, we presume, to Charlotte Douglas International Airport, where they will then be distributed to places like Chicago and Kansas City and other places in the middle of the country. So we will have essentially become a deep water port in a way.
Exactly.
That took visionary thinking, it seems to me. How do people see this coming?
I think it's either extreme vision or luck. I take your pick.
You think it's luck?
Yes.
And because of our location, we kind of think George Washington called Charlotte a trifling place, but we're kind of located in a good place geographically. For some reason, what makes us so special? You kind of alluded to this earlier, but tell me why not Atlanta? They're not that far away from us. Why not, I don't know, Richmond?
Well, I think when you're a trifling place, you have to try harder. Mm-hmm. And we've always tried harder to get better here. And I think that's reflected in the growth you've seen in Charlotte.
But what's so special about our location on the map that makes us more a better candidate for this than Atlanta or Richmond or Memphis or one of the other medium-sized cities around this area?
Well, we're actually on the Norfolk Southern line from Virginia to New Orleans, the Piedmont Crescent, they call it. We, again, are luckily located at that crossroads that Chase has mentioned historically, the trade crossroads here in Charlotte. Again, just luck of a location. We're on that Piedmont Crescent line, and it lets that traffic, rail traffic, get to the airport and go in other locations to the rest of the country.
Isn't Atlanta on a rail line?
Mike, they're located, and they're going to do just fine. The question is...
Oh, darn.
The question is, what other opportunities exist given your location? And the history of this region has the men and women of the community, whenever there was a challenge, going out and finding a solution to the challenge. And the location was the strength. You first had the trading paths. We've got East and West Trade Street. Mm-hmm. You have North and South Tryon Street. And now, instead of dealing with a small county and then regional approach to trade and commerce, certain intersections on Earth at certain points of time do quite well. And you remember from reading your history book, you'd hear about the cities that were prominent for something for some period of time simply because of location.
Charleston.
Correct. And the shifting of the trade routes decides which cities are big at a certain point in time. And what's happened here is this is a can-do community where the folks said, all we got really is location. How are we going to lever it?
Right.
And one of the first challenges in the history of this area was, well, how do we get a railroad? Nobody was going to give them a railroad. The Eastern establishment was not in North Carolina was not going to provide it for them. So they went out and raised money from Columbia and asking Camden, any city in South Carolina with money, will you help us build a railroad? Whichever one of you will help build a railroad, we'll run the railroad from your place to our place. Mm-hmm. Columbia anteed up, and all of a sudden we had a north-to-south route, and then the Eastern establishment said, well, maybe we need to have an east-to-west route. And so we had two rail lines that converged.
Intersection.
So we're an intersection in that intersection.
8577 intersection.
Intersection. Data pipelines, intersection. Financial transactions, intersection. We've layered intersections upon intersections in different sectors of commerce, and that gives you a foundation for the next.
Was this done purposefully, or was it done, the bankers needed this, and the rail people needed this, and somebody else needed that, and so it all happened, but it didn't happen in any coordinated way? Or was it? Did we have city fathers who saw all this and went after it as a unit?
We faced as many challenges just like we're facing now with the economy and the jobs picture, where you have to go and bootstrap a solution. You have to go out and figure out what you can do. There was a time, early part of the century, we didn't have any revenue coming on stream. The war started, and a small group of people went up and said, we need to get a military base. Maybe Washington will give us a military base. Mm-hmm. They got the military base here, 60,000 men and the payroll associated with it that they put on the west side of town in Steel Creek, and that was done by a small contingent of folks who felt like there's a need, and they went out and got it.
It's also how we got the first NBA team, the first NFL team, and the Democratic National Convention.
Absolutely.
And that's been a history with what Jerry just mentioned back in the 90s and on through. In the last decade, they looked at the sectors that were growing here in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the banking. So with the Charlotte Regional Partnership, the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce, the City Fathers, they continued to grow the region and all the other counties around the region, too. We have the number one industrial site location county in the country is the Iredell-Mooresville area, where industry is coming. It's the number one location in the country. It's tied to the industry, and the fourth largest manufacturing area in the country is our region. So when you have the manufacturing and those goods and services needing the additional airport services, it's just a hand-in-glove fit.
But Mike, expand on that, because obviously it's fairly clear once you get the deeper picture of what this Panama Canal expansion is going to mean for cargo, just up and down the East Coast, coming to the East Coast as opposed to the West Coast, and how this intermodal facility at the airport will encourage a lot of traffic into our airport from railway lines hauling this cargo. So the airport will certainly benefit. The city of Charlotte will certainly benefit from this. How does the region benefit?
Well, we are right now presently involved. We were fortunate enough for the region to get a $5 million Housing Urban Development Sustainable Community Grant that many people have heard about in the last year or so. We also are looking at the implementing the strategic economic plan that we've come up with here that has been in place for about 5 or 6 years. And all of that is looking into the 21st century to make Charlotte be globally competitive, which is what the summit will be talking about next week. Mm-hmm. How do you compete? Well, the areas that are mega regions, the areas that compile all their assets and get competencies that cross over all those multiple aspects of the economy are the ones that remain competitive. And what we have going on here in Charlotte, fortunately, are quite a few industry clusters. We've got biomed, we've got the aerospace, we've got the motorsports, we've got the financial, and we've got lately the energy that you've heard about. So we've got like a 5 or 6 tier industry cluster for the region, and all of them need logistics and travel and airport access for their executives to service the world, and that's becoming a unique asset that we have here when they can access the world from Charlotte.
I know you've said you're very confident, Jerry Orr, that we will remain a major hub for an airline, American Airlines being that airline for the foreseeable future once this merger takes place. But is this one of the reasons that the existence of this intermodal facility, one of the reasons that is attractive for an airline coming into this market, American, who might say, well, you know, just as U.S. Airways did to Pittsburgh, you know, we don't really need a big hub here. But with the intermodal facility and so much traffic of that sort coming through, would that be a way to keep them here?
I don't think it's so much that there's any relationship between the air travel of the air cargo and the sea containers.
Business is located.
Except that both of them are business, both of them are logistics, and all of those things that are synergistic are there. It takes money to run an airline. It takes money to run a train, it takes money to move these cargoes. So having more of all of those things that are synergistic in one place builds a stronger facility.
One of the things we've talked a lot about since the recession hit, Shea Saunders, and the banking industry was particularly hit hard by the recession, is the need for Charlotte to diversify its economy. And we have been developing biotech, and we have been trying to attract energy companies to this area to diversify the economy. What does this do, the existence of this intermodal facility, do to that effort to diversify?
It allows incredible leverage. When you talk about the facility, it's no longer just an airport. It's an intermodal zone, which means it's an intersection for all forms of things with mass. There are two themes that are out there globally that are driving things along. One of them is, you can call this the age of fulfillment. One of the themes is, I want it now. Mm-hmm. Getting it to me faster means something. That's why Amazon's in here. That's why the fulfillment of online shopping, where you get it quickly, is important. Another theme that's out there is I want it exactly customized to spec. And that points out a new industrial revolution that's taking place where software and smart instructions are making machines smart so they can do a whole lot more things. In order for that economy to work, you need to get the pieces and the parts in and out of your factories. And that's why the Germans, the Swedes, the French, the Italians, and the Japanese are here. So as you read your local business publications and you see certain factory located here, located in Lincolnton or located across the border or located in Charlotte or headquartered here, we're now in a competitive world where regions, collections of people, are working together for their consumer interests and for their manufacturing and virtual existence.
Well, you say that we can create, import, manufacture, assemble, ship, handle, and deliver just in time anything, and we can do it more economically and with a better margin of profit than anywhere else. Why?
That's the goal. Jerry Orr in the airport had pointed out that with passengers, you can do it and you can achieve market share. Mm-hmm. We went from nothing. In the 1960s, we could brag about maybe 100 flights, 1,300 people a day. Now 39 million passengers. We're right now 33rd in air freight. We don't have the intermodal center online. As things shift, there will be profit margins and not having to put your hands on something so many times.
Yeah.
For regions that have their railroad 5 miles away from their airport, from their seaport, and from the trucks, each time you have to put your hands or move something, there's an added cost to it.
Right.
The carriage goes up. The dray charge in the business goes up. If you have no dray charge, if you can move it from one place to the other and it's hundreds of yards away, you've saved a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
That immediately means if you're in the world of mass where everything has costs, no matter where it is, everything we wear, somebody put their hands on it, costs money.
Mm-hmm.
If you can minimize the number of connections with the hands on it, then you can increase profit margins. A piece of the story, again, based on location, is once those ships are over here, most of the time they pay for the goods that they're bringing in on the haul over here, not much to haul back. As they move into the Gulf Coast, the East Coast, there are export opportunities available that didn't exist before.
In other words, the empty containers.
The empty containers, the empty space. And so businesses locating here have the opportunity to move into Southeast Asia markets their manufactured goods. And consequently, if you can cut down the costs of handling and getting the goods in, getting the goods out, that translates to the bottom line, and that makes you a profit center for manufacturing.
If this is as successful as it sounds like it's liable to be, what does that mean for this region? What will this look like?
Well, part of it is another asset to support the growth of our economy, our communities, and jobs for our people. And we have excellent nationally known education programs, partnerships and sector partnerships with private industry like the Siemens and CPCC mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. What we have got to do here in the region is strategically bring that up to scale to match the potential for this intermodal asset with all of our other industry clusters and put our people to work.
How much time do we have to get up to speed?
Well,
that?
That's what the world is doing. The World Global Forums, the Brookings Institute reports, everybody looking at the future of manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, global trade is a talent pipeline. You've got to put people in place to reach the potential. So we're trying to marry those two in this strategic plan.
Are we on track to do that? Are we behind the
curve? Well, that's what the plan has identified, that we're going to have that conversation at the Global Summit next week. That's a part of that.
The work.
We have to take a break. You can finish. You can follow up on that in just a couple seconds, Jay Saunders. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Children's Choir, presenting a magical interlude, Dinner Cabaret, Saturday, 7 p.m. at Park Road Baptist Church. Tickets available at charlottechildrenschoir.org. And Fisher & Phillips LLP, a national labor and employment law firm representing employers in North Carolina from the Charlotte and Columbia offices. Partner Mason Alexander and Fisher & Phillips on the web at laborlawyers.com. The FDA recently issued new warnings on the safety of some hip replacements as part of Diane Rehm's occasional series Mind and Body. Diane and her guests talk about what patients need to know about safety and the cost of hip replacements. That's in 20 minutes at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
WFAE has a challenge for you. Last fall, you eliminated 5 days of our fundraiser by responding to our request to pledge early. We want to do it again and are encouraging you to pledge today to help shorten the upcoming spring pledge drive. Every dollar brought in before the drive will go towards the goal of $550,000. And for every $55,000 raised, we'll eliminate a day. Pledge your support at WFAE.org and be automatically entered in our giveaway to the French Riviera.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impending change in global trade patterns that Charlotte is poised to take advantage of because of the existence of an intermodal facility at Charlotte Douglas International Airport, which will open later this year, and because of the redesign, essentially, of the Panama Canal, which will allow massive ships through the canal. And it will change the shipping patterns around the globe. That's happening in 2014-2015. We're here with Chase Saunders, an attorney with McNair Law Firm, and also on the planning committee for the Regional Competitiveness Summit, which takes place at the Harris campus of CPCC next week. It's open to the public. Information on our website, WFAE.org. Mike Manis is with us, Director of Community and Economic Development at the Central Atlantic Council of Governments, and Jerry Orr, Aviation Director for Charlotte Douglas International. We were talking about where we were on the curve of getting ready for all of this, not just in terms of getting the rail lines put in at the airport, but getting the workforce ready for this, getting the community ready for this. And you wanted to chime in on that, Chase Saunders.
The pieces of this story have the logistics involve the location, the intersection of commerce, the business infrastructure from the various business sectors, and then there's the human component, the ability to create a workforce pipeline from high school through the community colleges into the universities so that you have the technical advanced manufacturing workforce to handle the jobs of this new industrial revolution, as it were, when you add the smart software programs to what were formerly dumb machines but are now smart machines that require conversation by way of programming. And those jobs have training components to them. At certain levels, it's the university in Charlotte. At the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, they're forming relationships with the manufacturing community to meet that need. Relationships are being formed with the community colleges to meet the need of retraining workers, bringing them up to speed, affordably training people to handle jobs that pay exceedingly well because these are technology jobs, and then bringing that to the level of the high school folks who can be trained to get into this pipeline so that the new jobs can be ready just in time to meet the needs of the people who are engaged in manufacturing. Right now, Central Piedmont sends its folks to Germany to get training, and then they can retrain them here to meet the needs of Siemens and other enterprises that are looking for those trained workers to make this area worth investing in.
I think it's Richard Florida who wrote The Rise of the Creative Class, and ever since that book came out, we've been talking about that on various different programs, and the city of Charlotte and the Mecklenburg County and the region has been talking about becoming an attractive place for creative people. And in this paper that you wrote with Tony Zeiss, the president of CPCC, and Michael Gallus, who's a urban planner and actually global strategist, Chase, you said that, and the paper's called Create It, Make It, Move It. You're trying to encourage this to become a creative place where things are thought up and then we have the ability after that to manufacture and ship those things. The last two things seem to be in place, the ability to manufacture and ship. What about the first part of that, the creative element? We're kind of buttoned down.
Well, the question is, what do you consider creating? Do you consider creating a variation on a particular product, a variation on a particular machine process? Do you consider those things creative, or do you require it to be strictly in the arts? We're talking about the manufacturing arts, where there's creativity. There's a book that...
But to be creative, one has to
We have to teach independent thinking, not teaching to the test.
I'm not getting into educational
theory. But you have to. That's part of it.
In order to be creative at a minimum, you have to understand the fundamentals of the disciplines associated with the thing that you're going to be creating. For instance, very few people can pick up a guitar and come up with a song. They have to understand through lots and lots of hours how to make that work.
You have to know the rules before you can break it.
Correct. And so somebody has to teach you what the rules are, and affordably. And the community colleges provide that training affordably. There's one of the things that's interesting in this new revolution that's coming up, and it's an accurate statement. Real nations make things.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in this room was made by somebody
or
some entity. And countries need to make things. And certain regions can make things cheaper than others. And Jerry Orr at the airport has set the stage to help us make things and then design new things. And we get into 3D manufacturing and some things like that that may be too far off the mark.
Sometimes timing can be everything. And being able to do the regional planning that we're underway with right now with the Connect Project and accomplishing this past fall, this economic strategy by the U.S. Department of Commerce that we do here in the region, we were able to follow on some of the best practices in 2010 and 2011 that were coming out, like the Harvard Prosperity at Risk in the education world, and then the Pathways to Prosperity that was talking about how do you train your workforce and your human capital and your people to be able to interact and be what Chase has just described. We implemented that approach because we had so many great teaching colleges with so many great training programs, so many industries that were doing and excelling, being held up as examples in the rest of the country.
So
and we've been able to corral that and put that into our strategy here, and that's where we are on that curve.
So when Governor McCrory talks about building a higher education system that is focused on getting students jobs after graduation, is that the right path to be on, or is there value in the liberal arts education that gives people creative thought processes that they can then take to running airports and running railroads and manufacturing widgets?
Well, the competencies that it takes to be creative covers a spectrum, the full spectrum, so that when we have financial sectors here, we have energy sector here, we do have automotive and aerospace sectors here, it takes that same level across the entire spectrum to accomplish it at that top level. That's what we've got here with our great education programs and planning to be able to take that from the K-12 level all the way to the higher education level.
The story of Charlotte is an inclusive one, and all areas of education are important. Certain areas have been ignored and not emphasized over the past perhaps generation or so, and those stories are going to be told, and that's the story of the reemergence, the return of manufacturing to our shores. Mm-hmm. It's a theme in many of the publications. The Atlantic most recently has written about it, but if you you search around, you'll find that there's a belief, you heard it, I believe, in the president's speech about manufacturing coming back.
But one of the reasons it's coming back is because shipping costs, right? That it you get some of your product, your profit eroded by the shipping costs. So when we're able to put 22,000 rail cars on one ship and ship it from China through the Panama Canal to the port of Charleston, and then up the railway to Charlotte Douglas International Airport, out to Chicago from there. Have your costs gone down? Does that negate the reason to bring back manufacturing when you've made it easier to ship goods?
The technologies are changing. The smart machines, and if you search 3D manufacturing, robotics, and things like that, what's happening now is that the machines are being programmed to do a whole lot of different tasks. And accordingly, you get economies of scale. If you can get a machine to make more things faster than 1,000 people in one of these factories abroad, then you certainly will do it. And what we're able to do now and what Silicon Valley is about is creating the software that will allow that to happen. It's a new path.
But the machine will have the job. I won't.
No. If you go to a course at Central Piedmont Workforce Development and devote some time to it, you can run the machine, and the machine will ultimately make things and help benefit the life of all of us and create the economy.
The other half of that reshoring is also in the quality and the level of the goods, too. So we do make it well in the USA. So some of that is a quality control factor that, when coupled with those logistics costs, right, that's the tipping point.
Let me share some comments that have come in while we've been talking. On email from John and Matthews, having spent time in many cities, it appears to me that different cities inherited so much culture from the early immigrants. To me, the Scottish-founded towns of Charlotte and Fayetteville are more aggressive and competitive. Note, I'm from a more English town in another state. Would you agree with that statement, that we owe a lot of our, well, where we are today, to our Scottish forebears?
We'll accept all compliments.
We had an anonymous call from an airport employee. They want to know why, if Charlotte Douglas is such a large airport, they don't charge a higher enplanement fee. According to this caller, Charlotte Douglas charges $2 per passenger, where airports similar or even smaller in size charge $5 per passenger. Is that one of the ways we've become competitive and cheaper for airlines to use because of that? Or is this unrelated to that?
Well, the numbers are misstated. That's not how we charge. We charge what it costs us to provide. And because it costs us less to provide because we're more efficient, that number is lower to the airlines.
How do you avoid the temptation in this greedy age in which we live of not, even though you can do it for $2, why not charge $5 and make $3?
My fine Scottish heritage tells me to focus on being cheap.
An email from a Lake Norman residence. Do not ignore the part that Duke Power, its original name, and its brilliant use of the North Carolina and South Carolina rivers to produce electricity for manufacturing in the 19th and 20th centuries played into this. Then came the railroads, the highways, and the airport. Actually, the railroad was here before the
1840s.
Yes, mm-hmm. That came in before the Civil War. So let's put your headphones on, and we will take a call from John in Charlotte. John, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a professional that works in the trucking industry primarily, but also in aviation as well. And one of the things that I do is work with companies to make their transportation more efficient. Sort of streamline the transported goods. And I also run a manufacturing company that does a lot of shipping. And I've been hearing a lot about this, the intermodal facility between rail and air. And I guess I'm pretty concerned about it. The reason being that when we think of intermodal, either when I look at it as I'm shipping goods or when I talk to a company that I'm consulting for about making their shipping more efficient, intermodal is you know, transfer between two adjacent forms of transportation, such as train to truck or boat to train. But air and rail are not adjacent to one another in the transportation chain. And they're actually used for very, very different purposes. For rail, we're dealing with generally very inexpensive commodities that are very heavy and don't need to get there quickly. And of course, with air, we're talking about shipping generally more expensive commodities that are lighter and need to get there in a rush. And so I don't see the use, honestly, for an intermodal facility that changes products from a train to a plane.
Jerry?
So maybe you can shed some light on it.
Okay.
Sure. The intermodal yard at the airport is intermodal between sea containers and domestic containers on trains and trucks. Because it's located on the interstate between the two interstates, it's the perfect place for such a transfer. The relationship between the airport and the sea containers is mostly geographical. We have land that happened to be graded flat because we built a new runway. It's very linear because interstates, runways, and rail yards are very linear and sits on the main line of the Norfolk Southern Railroad. So it becomes a very economical place to build a yard to replace the one in downtown Charlotte, which cannot be expanded is not very efficient. It is operating over capacity, which allows the operator, not that they would do that, but to cherry pick their customers, which makes the cost of shipping a container here more expensive. And besides, why do you need 500 tractor trailers a day in downtown Charlotte?
Okay, so I understand then that primarily it's the majority of the use is not going to be between air and rail. Is that correct?
The relationship is that if you buy a bulldozer, which is very heavy, it's probably going to come by rail. But if you forget to ship the key and someone's just spent a lot of money for a new bulldozer and doesn't have the key, they can get it here this afternoon.
Got it.
So there won't be a lot of transferring of rail cargo to an airplane.
Absolutely. Well, very, very little, if any at all. It's all about logistics, and the business you're in is primarily logistics. Your customers don't care how it got here. They want it cheap, and they want it in good shape.
And, in fact, it's all about place, isn't it?
Location, and that combination makes that intermodal just a unique asset the way it is coming together.
Thank you for your call, John. What do we not have that we need to put in place to take full advantage of what's about to happen in the next 5 years?
If I knew that, I'd be working on it.
part of the reason, that's a great question, and that's one of the things that we're going to address in this global competitiveness summit.
You got 30 seconds.
We have partners in government, partners from abroad, a number of partners, and we're going to discuss it at that conference. We're at the planning stage. What we need now is to have a discussion as to what the elements of a strategic plan should be. It's a great story.
All right. And you can hear that story because you're invited to go to this regional competitiveness summit next week at the Harris campus of CPCC. Information about that is on our website at WFAE.org. Chase Saunders is one of the planners of that. Mike Manis is Director of Community and Economic Development at the Central Atlanta Council of Governments. And Jerry Orr, who tells us American Airlines will keep their hub here in perpetuity, we're holding to that, is Aviation Director of Charlotte Douglas International Airport. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7.